All right, so this is Mike Piccirillo, and I'm the executive director of CASDA, and doing an EdCast this week, and joining me is Greg Weiline, one of our faculty members here at CASDA, and Greg's an educator, but also has published many articles in a variety of different newspapers and periodicals through the years on education, and Greg, first of all, welcome and thank you for joining me.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And I know your background really is in working with at-risk students and in dropout prevention. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about your experiences.
Yeah, I was a high school teacher for 36 years, working exclusively with at-risk students. And then I became involved in the design and implementation of alternative education programs. And with CASDA, I've been doing a program review, dropout prevention, intervention roundtables, and continuing my writing on at-risk students and their needs.
Great. Well, so I did a podcast last week about August graduation. Because this is June, and June's the season of graduation, and I wanted to talk about a student that I experienced when I was a superintendent who struggled to graduate on time, but eventually made it. And I wanted to talk about the experience that that student went through, because I felt like the system, in some respects, failed the student, but yet the student was able to overcome some of the failures of the system and had help from different individuals along the way, and it was eventually able to graduate in August. And so I have kind of a fond memory of that, but I also have, there's also a part of me that feels conflicted about that, because why weren't we able to help this student ultimately as a system achieve graduation on time? But then I know you have written, and it will be published in our newsletter, you've written an article talking about some of your experiences with some of the students that you worked with. And I know that graduation is not necessarily the be-all and end-all for all students, and that just because you don't graduate from high school, you don't necessarily fail in life. And I was just wondering if you could just share a little bit about that.
I think there are two failures with a student who leaves early. One is the school system. A student likely has been in that school system for 13 years. If the normal graduation age is 18 years old, that's 72% of that student's life they've spent in your school. And I just don't think, you can just wait till they're a junior or senior and just all of a sudden the kid realizes, I'm not going to make it. I think the schools have failed to intervene at an earlier age. Most of our interventions continue to be at the high school level, when these social-emotional issues have either been with the student their entire life or surface at a much earlier age, and then they just carry those issues with them. And the other issue is, on your podcast, when you mentioned August graduate, that was through summer school. And unfortunately, so many school districts, because of budget reasons, have cut out summer school programs. I know my school district eliminated summer school near the year I retired. And I think what has happened is school districts have replaced summer school with credit recovery programs. And, granted they will increase the graduation rate, but I don't know if they make the student feel connected with their school. They see it as a quick road to graduation, and school districts and the education department accept that. So I don't know if we're helping the student as much as just moving them on.
Well, I think that's a great point, and I think I think there's a systems failure that is going on here. And I wanted to share with the listener, but also with you, Greg, a little excerpt from a study that I've been reading called Bored to Win, Schooled to Lose, why equally talented students don't get equal chances to be all they can be. This is out of Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce. And just this little excerpt I think is really interesting, and there's a part that I think relates directly to what you just said, and we can talk a little bit more about it. The excerpt is actually out of the introduction. It says, "The American dream promises that individual talent will be rewarded, regardless of where one comes from or who one's parents are. Based on this ideal of equal opportunity, it's tempting to believe that education and career outcomes reflect a natural sorting according to merit. But this presumption risks suggesting that those who do not thrive in school or the workforce lack talent, when in fact, they more often lack sufficient systemic support on the journey to reach their full potential." And I think the key that I want to focus on is the, is this piece of the lack of sufficient systemic support on the journey to reach their full potential.
I think in addition to summer school programs being cut by several school districts around 2009, 2010, at the same time, which is very disadvantageous for these students, CTE programs at schools were cut. Cooking classes, shop classes, construction, electronics, they were also eliminated because of budget crises from our school districts. I had students in my alternate program, instead of taking a foods class, you know, taking romantic poetry of Shakespeare. And, you know, they weren't connecting with that. So we had a class where the student could have felt, would have felt engaged and garnered some meaning from a foods class or a shop class, they were instead reading Shakespeare's poetry and making no connection at all. So I think at the same time, the cutting of summer school programs and the elimination of CTE. And of course, everything in education is cyclical. I mean, that's right. Major push now to bring those classes back into the school.
Right. I liked in your article, The Stigma of the Dropout Label, you asked some really, I think, important questions. You were talking about, what should we make of the 12,736 students who leave school without a high school diploma? And you asked, what should educators think? What should parents think? And how should our educational bureaucracies respond? And then you said, and most importantly, what should the students think who do not receive their diploma? You've interacted with a lot of these kids. What is the thinking out there?
My former students that did not receive their diploma. First of all, I think the intervention programs that we have in school district and the alternative education programs have really change an attitude for these students towards their school. I remember when I first started teaching, and there was no such thing as social emotional learning or intervention strategies for at-risk students. And the kids that left school left in anger, and they left with a feeling that the school's done nothing for me, that my school sucks, they don't care about me, and they left. I think since we've implemented these programs, that attitude has completely changed, and now the students feel that the schools have tried.
Okay.
You know, that the teachers in these programs care about them and they've tried. And that's a big shift in attitude. I think it's a very important shift.
Could you share a story of a student?
Yeah. Of course, since I wrote that article, I've thought of several other students. But, I was at the Y last week and a dentist was telling me that, he said, Nicole's still my assistant. And Nicole left my program, left school in 10th grade. And then she went on, and eventually she, most students that drop out find their way. And Nicole went into a hygienist program and ended up getting a degree, and she's probably on her 15th year working with this dentist as an assistant. And, I just contracted with a former student that owns his own tree service company. I didn't get the teacher discount I was expected, but I know he does good work. It's very expensive to have trees cut down, but he does a super job. He has when he comes to the house, there's like four trucks, huge trucks, and it's his own business. And he made it through, he started 11th grade and then left. So there are a number of, you know, there are also, I mean, I don't think we can ignore that there are students who drop out and don't make it. And I don't know if we do enough for those students. I was thinking, what can schools do? I almost think that usually they went to summer school, like your August graduate. Now, right. If that doesn't exist anymore, what do we do? Then I almost think there should be a boot camp or a counseling session at the least, where the kids that don't graduate are brought in a week, 2 weeks after graduation, and just go over their options with them. Right. Not just say, you didn't make it.
Right.
And I think that's what we do too often. And then they're just out the door.
Well, I agree, and I had written a note to myself as I was thinking about our conversation that in some situations I've experienced where, you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. You know, once a student drops out, they're no longer anybody that we were responsible for. So therefore, we don't make attempts to stay in touch. We don't make attempts to see how they're doing. And then there are other examples in my experience where people go way above and beyond. School counselors, other people in school who maybe have connected with that particular student after they drop out to stay connected and to see if there's anything additionally that they can do. Because I think one of the things that I have noticed with students through 30 some odd years in public education is that light bulb, you know, that spark that clicks on at some point for somebody to maybe come to that realization that I really need to establish a path for myself. It happens at different points in time for different kids. And I don't think we can expect that it's gonna happen within the nice, tidy, neat little box of a K-12 system all the time. And so, but aren't they still our responsibility, even if they're not, you know, specifically within that box?
Yeah, I mean, I think our responsibility is to at least provide those students with the toolbox of what's next. Mm-hmm. You know, they have the counselor or the graduation advocate show the students that they can, you know, here's job opportunities, especially in today's economy. Here's community colleges where you can end up getting your high school diploma and still start your college career if that's what you want.
Right.
Here's training programs. Here's the Youth Build program in Rensselaer County, where you learn home building plus get your GED. I mean, there's many opportunities. There's a lot of supports, but if the students are not aware of those, then we're just moving them out the door, and that's where the stigma lies, when you just move them out the door and they're clueless as to what to do next.
Yeah,
but eventually the light bulb does, you know, somehow, you know, they're tired of the nothingness of their life, and then I think they turn the switch on.
I think I love the title of your article, and I'm really strongly anticipating the positive feedback we get from when we publish it in our upcoming newsletter. But the stigma of the dropout label, mm-hmm. you know, there is a stigma to that, and I think we ought to be concerned with that as mm-hmm. educators and as communities.
Yeah, I think as much as we should be concerned with the stigma of the dropout label, we should be concerned with the number of schools that get kids through and get them diploma where they don't really deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're doing just as much of a disservice to those students as we are to the stigma of the dropout. You know, there's studies going on with the credit recovery. I mean, 90% of schools have credit recovery programs.
Yes.
I mean, they're not going away.
Right.
But are they being implemented properly? And is there an accountability factor? I think that has to be looked into, and actually is being looked into. I know a Westchester County school is under investigation for their skyrocketing graduation rate. Vanderbilt University, the Brookings Institute, is doing a study on online credit recovery programs. I mean, they're huge, and I think they can be implemented to the point where they're a huge benefit for this type of students. But to just like put a kid in a credit recovery program because they've done nothing from September to May, and then let that kid pass, I mean, that kid's next step in life is going to be, I can cheat the system. in a job or anywhere, in a marriage, anywhere. I mean, we you know, the kid, I think all our students need to leave school with or without a diploma, knowing that there's accountability in their life.
Sure, and you know, I can speak directly to what you're talking about with the credit recovery, because I know I supported the implementation of credit recovery in the school system that I was in, and you know, I guess I always wondered about how valid the results of that really were. And I think, you know, you can get caught up in looking just at the end result. So somebody getting credit and then therefore graduating because they earned, I'm using quotes, you can't see me do that, but I'm air quotes, they earned the credit. But what does that really mean? Like, what value did they get from that? And I think that's something that we certainly have to question. I think we have to, you know, if we're talking about getting kids across the finish line, that's a term that gets used, whatever, and we can talk about what does that really mean, but getting them across the finish line, getting them to graduation, then how do we know that there is substance behind that diploma?
That's very true. I think with this, the type of students that we end up working with who are likely dropouts are students that are disengaged from school. They don't connect with adults, they don't connect, there's usually family issues and social issues. And then to just put that type of student in front of a computer screen and give them credit is a disservice. It's an emotional disservice. I mean, we're already looking into studies about excessive amounts of screen time with teenagers and the negative factors involved, and now we're taking them out of a classroom situation where there is engagement and giving credit for being in front of the screen. I think it's I don't know. It's all new. I mean, it's relatively new, and I think it's the end game to the credit recovery programs. It's not even on the table yet.
Yeah, and I guess we have a bigger question to answer. And what is the value of a high school diploma in terms of the what it actually represents? Mm-hmm. I think that factors into a lot of the conversation about graduation, not graduating, the process that students go through in regards to being educated, and what does that even mean to be educated, and does education stop because you dropped out?
Right.
Does education stop because I got a diploma and now since I have a diploma I don't necessarily need further education? I mean, I think we have to do a better job of helping young people to recognize that education is a lifelong process. And that it doesn't have to be within a formal setting to necessarily be valid and valuable to your life and your experience. And I know you've worked a lot of kids.
The value comes from what you become in life, not the diploma that you have in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for community college graduates, four-year degree, master's degree. It's what you become in life.
Mm-hmm.
Our prisons have a good number of people, especially our federal prisons, of people with PhDs. They have their diplomas, they have multiple diplomas. It doesn't mean they've become good people in life. And our students can become a good contributing member of our society, even without a high school diploma, if you take that next step for yourself to make something of yourself. And I just wish we did more as educators to help the students take that next step that don't make it in our schools. I mean, we have to accept that, 13 out of your 18 years of life, you've been in a school system. And if you don't make it, mostly in the last 3 years, that says something. And I was at you may have been at the faculty meeting for one of our functional teams, and I mentioned the point where while I was teaching in the alternate education program, I always had elementary teachers say to me, when he gets in high school, when she gets in high school, they'll be in your program. I know they're going to be in your program. And I used to smile and acknowledge, and I'll set out, look for them and accept it. But it was just like 2 years ago, it came to me. My light bulb went out and said, wait a minute, we're saying, you know a kid in kindergarten or second grade that's going to be in my program that you didn't even sense we could do anything about that at that early age? Yeah. And I think we really have to see those, see the bigger picture with those kids.
Yeah, I can certainly relate to what you're saying, because at a certain point in my career, I began to challenge people when they would say, well, we could identify someone who is going to drop yes. out, you know, back when they were in, you know, kindergarten. And I would say, well, so then what did we do about that then?
Right.
I mean, as if it was a huge success because you could identify it. But the real work was, okay, now that you, if you think you've got some data that can tell you ahead of time that a child's not going to succeed, what are you doing? What are we doing as a system along the way? And this goes back to that notion of systems failure,
right?
You know, which is really important to me, because there are good people in school systems who are working incredibly hard,
yeah.
harder than most, to help students find a successful path,
mm-hmm.
and in many cases they end up spinning their wheels because the system is not supporting the work that they're doing. The system is actually working counter in many respects to what they're doing. And I always feel badly, and have felt badly looking back on my career, for those people who I know their heart and soul was in to making sure that every child was, you know, was respected and was cared for and was given an opportunity to be successful, and yet the system really was the failure, not the individual people within the system per se.
Well, I think that's an interesting point with the big push on social emotional learning from state ed and even the federal government. I always found it interesting that as a teacher and teachers in my program that I was responsible for hiring, if you were a good teacher, you were already doing social emotional learning 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's not a new concept for someone that's a good teacher. I mean, I days of just writing on a blackboard for 40 minutes of lecturing students, hopefully that's coming to an end.
Well, we've been saying that for a while.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, but I'm not so sure I have a ton of faith in that changeover. Public education tends to change pretty slowly to the rest of society. You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, and maybe you can shed some light on this for me, because we, you know, at CASA, especially within the last, you know, year, we've been talking a lot about equity and, you know, socioeconomics and race and, you know, the study that I quoted from earlier is really talking about equity and the lack of equity. You know, in the children that you've worked with, I mean, how does equity intersect with kids in terms of dropping out and really the potential for dropping out that you've seen?
Yeah. I think within an alternative program, I was just coaching at one this morning, the administrator, I think equity within the program exists.
Mm-hmm.
I think we still stereotype certain types of students, race, and those students are the ones that end up in our programs. And I think that's the equity issue, but it's not within the program itself, it's in the
It's how they get to the program.
How they get to the program.
Yeah.
So that's a huge challenge for school districts. We see that in the suspension rates, the research done on suspensions, the number of minority kids who are suspended versus, you know, white students.
Yeah.
I'm glad that's being looked at. And as you mentioned, it's always a slow process in education, but at least it's being looked at.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you were coaching this morning. Is that the coaching you're doing at Tony Clement?
Yes, the Albany City School District.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a alternate program for middle school through high school.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new administrator this year who is very involved in making several changes. I think he recognizes, rightfully so, that you know, working with this type of student is always a fluid experience, that you almost have to be on your game to change according to the students that can set your way. So it's not like a, you know, it's not like a typical public school where kids register and you predominantly know, you know what you're going to get. You don't know what the baggage these kids are going to bring.
Right.
And you have to, you know, be ready for the new challenges that certain kids bring. You know, whether it's the drug issue, the gang issues in the city schools. So it's been a it's been a great experience for me. I enjoy working over there. It's a change for me because I came from my work is in design and implementation has been mostly with small and suburban schools. I did the annual report for the Albany Alternative Education Program and made changes as a result of that report. Mm-hmm. But to be more involved and see the connections that that program seems to make with the community, I think that's been huge. It's been a huge interest to the districts that come to the Alternate Ed Dropout Prevention Roundtable to find out all the connections that actually can be made, that they can make it, make those connections, even if they're a small district. Like, what I'm most impressed with in Albany is the involvement with the district attorney's office. Mm. And I think that it's fantastic. Like, the smaller schools, they didn't realize that they could actually get assistance from the district attorney's office. You know, in East Greenwich, where I worked, I often utilized family court to help with my students. I would go to the family court hearings for some of my students. In my office is where I had the probation officers meet with my students. And they were able to make a connection with their life outside of school, what they do outside of school, with school, because their probation officer was right in my office. But those are all like a result of things that the kids have done negatively. But there's a lot of mental health counseling through the different county mental health agencies that are available. There's at-risk counselors that are available through certain programs in different counties. So I think it's just, again, it's who's going to do it and where's the time to do it. You know,
sure.
That's a challenge because you're still talking about altered programs are, the staffing is predominantly teachers. Albany has a wealth of support staff within their alternate program,
mm-hmm.
You know, homeschool coordinators and mental health personnel that many of the other schools do not have yet.
Right.
And I think that's what has interested me. I mean, definitely their kids are incredibly challenged and have a gauntlet of issues, but, you know, they have services there to help, and I'm very impressed with that.
Great. So it's a complex issue that we're talking about, and you know you mentioned a number of external systems that school systems can tap into and connect with, you know, like the district attorney's office, mental health services, and so I think that you know again to kind of go back to you know, earlier statement about. Systems failure, you know, sometimes it's a matter of systems just not connecting. You know, there are people doing work kind of in isolation from mm-hmm. each other, and if we partnered and connected, it certainly would make the support that we're providing students a lot more robust and comprehensive. Can you talk a little bit about, like so you've obviously had some success with making those kinds of connections. Can you help the listener a little bit who might be thinking, well, how do I do that? Like, how do you make those kind of connections?
I actually dealt with frustration because at my round table, I wanted to bring in a speaker from one of our county's mental health agencies and wrote to the director, didn't hear back, wrote to the assistant director, didn't hear back. I attended LaSalle's trauma presentation at the convention center in Albany. No, it was at the Egg in Albany. And, you know, one of the principal speakers was making that it's our responsibility to make connections because schools can't do everything on their own. They need the help from the outside agencies, like
right.
we're talking about. But then in a discussion with a few people that were at the conference during our break, it was more like if the community agencies don't feel the responsibility to connect with the schools. How do you get them to feel the responsibility? And I think what I'd like to see happen is a county-wide conference where you bring everyone on to the, in and you just say, you know, how can you help? How can the school help? How can, you know, Rensselaer County Mental Health help? How can Family Court, District Attorney's Office, and bring all these agencies in? You know, YMCA, how can all these different community agents help with the school system? And then, in turn, you know, the school system's helping those agencies.
Sure, yeah.
You know, the District Attorney's Office feels that their assistance is to lessen the pipeline of those students from the Tony Clement Center to maybe our jail population.
Right.
And he feels that if you can help the child, you can build a better man. And I think that's so true.
And
it's easier to help a child than it is to help an adult that's
sure.
already. So I think to summarize, I like to think that education and working with at-risk students is a fluid process. You have to change with the student. I mean, when I started, it was mostly, oh my God. When I was hired, I was asked by assistant superintendent at Columbia High School how I was coming from Berkshire Farm, a residential facility. And the assistant superintendent asked me how I would handle if I caught someone in the bathroom with a cigarette in their hand smoking. I had just come from a population of, you know, robberies, assaults, rapes,
and everything. Like smoking.
So, I mean, even in these programs, I've gone from the teenager who drinks and smokes and to marijuana, and now, you know, it just changes constantly. And you have to be well versed in how to handle that.
Sure. Sure. But what doesn't change is
yep.
there are needs and building relationships and making connections.
Yep.
With these, you know, individual students is critically important, and connecting into systems of support that are out there in our communities and within our schools, those are all still key things that we can do, even though the challenges may shift and change
right.
over time.
And the biggest connection should be the family connection,
mm-hmm.
and that should be the priority. And again, I think it's much easier to connect with families when the child is in elementary or middle school. If you wait till high school, that's very difficult. One thing I did at Columbia High School with my alternate program is for the first 4 years, I stood in the hallway on open house. And I stood in the hallway on open house. And all I did was stand in the hallway on open house because I never saw a parent. Mm-hmm. And I just watch all my colleagues on the same floor with parents marching in and parents marching out with a smile on their face. My parents were not going to open house. And why is that? There was a stigma. They knew their kids were having difficulty in school, and they didn't want to go hear about it again.
Right.
So what I did for the alternate education program is I went from having not a single parent on open house evening to doing a Saturday morning coffee hour for just those parents, and we would average probably 30 out of 38, you know, families would come in. Because there's no stigma. Every
right.
other parent there was dealing with the same thing.
Yeah.
And it was a huge success. But I think you have to make those connections, and you have to eliminate the stigma that parents fail because of their child.
Sure, and we have to recognize the barriers that get in the way of mm-hmm. parents maybe supporting their children in the way that we would hope they will and we would want them to, and be creative, as you were with your Saturday morning coffees, be creative with, you know, trying to reach out and not just always doing the traditional open house as being the one way, the one mechanism to make a connection, but try some different things.
Yeah, and I just, when I left the principal at the Tony Clement Center a little while ago, and we were talking about strategies and what he wants to implement next year, and I said, and we mentioned a lot of educational approaches to how to help kids, and if you look at what we just talked about, it's really common sense. You know, it's not, you don't have to go research or find, you know, a lot of it is just common sense, that connection. I was never taught how to connect with students. It's within me, you know, and I think you just have to have common sense and instinct.
Well, I want to thank Greg Weinlein for joining me today in this conversation about graduation and the stigma of the dropout label on students who don't graduate, and for sharing his experiences and sharing his knowledge and skills. And I would say to listeners that I think one of the big points that Greg made was you got to start early with this. You can't wait until high school. We identify kids early on, and we should be taking action to support them and their families as early on as possible. So please, hopefully you take that away, as well as some other nuggets of really good information and strategies that Greg shared with us. So thanks, and until next time, keep working hard at making connections with kids and their families, and supporting them to be successful in life.
Thank you.